Here is the Cannabis Bee News with your host, Joe Jameson.
Hello, everyone. How's it going today? This is episode CBN 02036-2013. Article number 1. Another reminder why changes in medical marijuana policy can't wait. Take it away, B.
Another reminder of why changes in medical marijuana policy can wait. By Steph Shearer. Executive Director, Americans for Safe Access. Source, HuffingtonPost.com. Earlier this week, while more than 200 citizen lobbyists were meeting face-to-face with their congressional legislators in Washington, D.C., to change federal policy on medical cannabis, a series of events occurred in Florida, making that state the next political battleground on this issue. On Monday, a Miami Herald article cited a recent poll indicating 81% of Florida voters said approve of doctors recommending cannabis to patients, with only 14% opposed. As many as 70% of voters said they supported a state constitutional amendment legalizing medical cannabis, a full 10 points higher than what Florida requires to pass such amendments. Then, tragically, later that afternoon, the home of Americans for Safe Access member and Sarasota resident Kathy Jordan and her 64-year-old husband Robert was raided by the Manatee County Sheriff's Department. With black ski masks and guns drawn in an intimidating fashion that has become all too familiar for medical cannabis patients across the country, sheriff's deputies came into their home and seized all 23 of Kathy's plants, which she uses to treat amyotrophic lateral sclerosis ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, a terminal illness. Kathy was diagnosed in 1986 with ALS, a progressive neurodegenerative disease that affects nerve cells in the brain and spinal cord, leading to loss of limb control, breathing, swallowing, and speech. However, after trying cannabis in 1989, she was able to better manage her symptoms and significantly improve her quality of life. Now, more than 20 years later, Kathy has outlived 5 of her support groups and 4 of her neurologists. As you can see from her medical history and the positive impact that cannabis has had on her life, Kathy is a shining example of why public policy must be changed, not only in Florida but at the federal level as well. Therefore, it was no surprise except maybe to the Manatee County Sheriff's Department that she was chosen as the lead spokesperson for SB 1250, the Kathy Jordan Medical Cannabis Act, a Florida bill introduced the very next day by State Senator Jeff Clemons D. Lake Worth. And, if SB 1250 fails to get the necessary votes for passage, there is another effort afoot by People United for Medical Marijuana to put an initiative on the 2014 ballot in Florida that would amend the state constitution in order to protect patients from exactly the type of raid that Kathy and her husband had to endure. This type of aggressive enforcement effort is not unique to Kathy or to other patients in Florida. It happens virtually every day across America, even in states that have adopted medical cannabis laws. One of the main reasons for this is an outdated policy at the federal level. For decades now, the federal government has refused to recognize the medical efficacy of cannabis, maintaining the position that it is a dangerous drug with no medical value. In July 2011, the Obama administration denied a 9-year-old petition filed by ASA and other groups aimed at reclassifying cannabis for medical use, in an effort to overturn the federal government's draconian policy. This bittersweet denial, however, gave ASA the opportunity to bring the issue of medical cannabis into the federal courts by appealing the denial to the D.C. Circuit. Kathy Jordan was one of the lead plaintiffs in this appeal, ASA v. DEA. Unfortunately, last month, the D.C. Circuit sided with the government's position, denying our appeal and refusing to usher in a new compassionate policy toward patients. However, advocates are not giving up and the medical cannabis patient community is now more ardent than ever. ASA will soon be filing for in-bank review of the appeal with the full D.C. Circuit, but advocates are not putting all of their eggs in the federal court basket. With last week's introduction of 2 congressional bills, H.R. 689, the state's Medical Marijuana Patient Protection Act, and H.R. 710, the Truth in Trials Act, advocates are hard at work convincing their members of Congress that federal policy must be changed. Indeed, it was the support for these bills that brought more than 250 people to Washington, D.C. This past weekend for the ASA hosted, first ever National Medical Cannabis Conference in Washington, D.C. More than half of the conference participants took to Capitol Hill Monday to show that they're a force to be reckoned with. Given the historical and widespread support for medical cannabis in the U.S., consistently polling at up to 80%, Congress has been woefully out of step with their constituents on this issue. Yet, that's about to change. It has to change, unless we want to be known as a society that favors attacking our most vulnerable citizens for using a medication that improves, and, in many cases, extends, their lives. I know we're better than that. We just have to show Congress that there will be consequences for ignoring the will of the people and the plight of patients.
Article number 2. First marijuana, now industrial hemp. Take it away, B.
First marijuana, now industrial hemp. Posted by Bruce Ramsey. Source, SeattleTimes.com. Hemp has long been an item of zealotry. Marijuana campaigners can talk you numb about hemp, and how wonderful it is. Now that the state of Washington has voted to decriminalize marijuana, it makes sense also to permit farming in hemp, and the bill is moving in the legislature to do that. House Bill 1888, sponsored by Republican Matt Shea, R. Spokane Valley, one of the legislature's conservatives. Both hemp and marijuana are the plant cannabis sativa, with the hemp variety having much less of the intoxicant THC. Hemp is not sold to make people high. Historically, it has been used to make twine and rope. Now it is imported from Canada for fancy soaps, cosmetics, edible oils and oil paints. An Oregon company, Bob's Red Mill, sells hulled hemp seed as a specialty food. Instead of importing this stuff, says Shea, why don't we grow it? Maine and Oregon have passed bills legalizing hemp, at least under state law. Eastern Washington, he says, has the perfect climate for it. It makes sense. If Americans can buy the products, why ban the plants? Since Initiative 502, Washington no longer bans marijuana, which may have 10 or 20% THC content. Shea hadn't supported 502. He's a lawyer. He says he could see legal problems in the initiative, problems the legislature is working on now. But in HB 1888, he supports hemp. Last week, HB 1888 cleared the House Committee on Government Accountability and Oversight on a bipartisan vote. The bill declares hemp to be the plant cannabis sativa with less than 1% THC by weight. To make sure farmers are growing the right plants, the bill would give the State Department of Agriculture a monopoly on the sale of seeds. Mark Struley, policy analyst to the director, said the Agriculture Department supports the bill. It's always exciting to have a new crop, he said at the hearing February 21. The feds still look at this as a drug. To us, it's a crop. Several notes of caution, this is another case in which the state would be challenging the federal government. Hemp is not the big deal marijuana is, but HB 1888 is still a kind of nullification bill. Cannabis fans who have been talking up hemp should note that Canada's experience has been limited and uneven. Since legalizing hemp in 1998, Canada's acreage has varied between 2,500 and 48,000. The peak was reached in anticipation of industrial fiber plants in Manitoba that were never built. Another issue is how hemp farming will affect marijuana. The two crops cannot be grown near each other outside, because the hemp plant will cross-pollinate the marijuana plant and ruin it. This is one of the reasons why most marijuana growers are expecting to grow it indoors.
Article number 3. Greenlee vet faces jail time for using marijuana as treatment for PTSD. Come on, our soldiers. We have an epidemic here with the soldiers that need treatment for PTSD. Leave them alone. Take it away, B.
Greenlee vet faces jail time for using marijuana as treatment for PTSD. By Whitney Phillips. Source, GreeleeTribune.com. Former U.S. Navy Corpsman Jeremy Usher came home in 2003 from Iraq and Afghanistan to sleepless nights and panic attacks, with vivid flashbacks of combat, horrifying nightmares, anxiety and depression, all amid memory loss and a severe stutter. After turning to alcohol to treat symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, Jeremy is serving probation in Weld and Larimer counties for his second and third DUIs. He's doing well in counseling and school, he says, but he faces jail time for using marijuana medicinally while on probation to manage his PTSD and traumatic brain injury. Jeremy finds himself in legal limbo. Medicinal marijuana is the one treatment that's helped him with his PTSD, but he violates his probation when he uses it, which puts him at risk of going back to jail. The court systems are very black and white, and PTSD is the definition of gray area, said Jeremy, 31. They're not acknowledging the gray area. Quote, I'm never going to be free of the flashes of the memories. I'm stuck with those for life. What I'm able to do is manage those in an appropriate manner, without just going out and cracking open a bottle. Jeremy Usher, former U.S. Navy corpsman. End quote. Jeremy docked to the Marines he treated as a combat medic remembers hearing a loud snap when he was shot in the side of his head. He was on the back of a helicopter sent into a hot zone to rescue wounded Marines, and he was struck as they were lifting off the ground, leaving him brain damage that caused his memory loss and stutter. I think the fact that I can't remember what happened is a good thing, Jeremy said. After a stint in a San Diego hospital and being discharged with an okay, good luck, Jeremy suffered from extreme paranoia as he wandered San Diego, constantly spinning around while walking to make sure no one was sneaking up on him. His nightmares of what he'd seen an armed Iraqi civilian he killed in combat kept him up at night. Anything that sounded like gunfire or a mortar round would set him into panic mode. 4th of July has always been hell for me, said Jeremy, who is the brother of Tribune employee Jennifer Usher. During the next few years, Jeremy began drinking heavily and developed for the first time a criminal history, a DUI in California, a phone harassment charge for calling an ex-girlfriend repeatedly, a protection order violation for drinking, and then two more DUIs within months of each other. Jeremy served time in jail and was sentenced to probation in Weld and Larimer for the DUIs, and both probation sentences have been extended twice because Jeremy didn't immediately start DUI treatment classes while he was seeking PTSD treatment at a Department of Veterans Affairs hospital. After a judge denied his request to continue using marijuana medicinally while on probation, Jeremy got a prescription for Marinol, a synthetic, highly expensive version of marijuana's active ingredient, THC. Now, with his service dog Rodney constantly by his side, he's sober, succeeding in counseling for PTSD and alcohol dependency, and he's in his third year of classes at Ames Community College. I'm never going to be free of the flashes of the memories. I'm stuck with those for life, he said. What I'm able to do is manage those in an appropriate manner, without just going out and cracking open a bottle. With hands tied. As the VA representative in the Ames Community College Financial Aid Office, Bob Small has worked with Jeremy since he started classes a few years ago. He's seen vast improvement in Jeremy's interactions with other students and teachers since he started using marijuana and Marinol, and he's concerned that taking away that treatment will stall Jeremy's improvement. Here's something that's helping him, but it's creating a barrier, Small said. Small, a 30-year member of the Navy and Air Force, deals daily with veterans who suffer from the same flashbacks, nightmares and anxiety as Jeremy, and he knows their PTSD is often misunderstood by civilians. As a veteran in the legal system, Jeremy says he understands that barrier all too well. Jeremy said he feels that the probation department doesn't understand the seriousness or scope of his PTSD standard procedures for probation, like a probation officer knocking on his door unexpectedly for a home visit, can send him into a world of panic. He's asked probation officers to call when they get to his house, but they say they can't give him warning. Jerry Green, Weld County's chief probation officer, said he could comment specifically on Jeremy's case because of privacy laws, but he said probation officers work as much as possible with people in special circumstances. He said they have to turn the case over to a judge after repeated violations. Most of all, though, Jeremy views the idea of being denied the right to use medical marijuana as opposed to paying about $18 per pill for Marinol as the worst example of the way in which the justice system isn't flexible enough for veterans with PTSD. "It's like I'm being punished for being a little different, and I'm not understanding why," he said. "Still," said Small, "the system's not a bad guy in this. Their hands are tied." Out the window. Jeremy faces 29 days in jail for failing dozens of drug tests while he was using medical marijuana. His probation officer has filed a complaint to revoke his probation for those failures. In Larimer County, a judge placed him on unsupervised probation, which means he no longer has to take those tests. Jeremy fears that jail time will mean he has no access to Marinol or anxiety medication, and without Rodney to wake him from nightmares and flashbacks, Jeremy says all the progress he's made will go out the window. Others, including Small and Jeremy's treatment providers, have the same concern. His doctors have written letters saying they've seen that marijuana and Marinol help Jeremy. Those treatment providers, including one at the VA, wrote that they want him to continue with his current treatment. Weld County jail officials say Jeremy would be evaluated individually for necessary medications. Small said if Jeremy does serve jail time, he's planning to take Jeremy homework assignments to help keep his mind focused on his education. District Attorney Ken Buck didn't comment specifically on Jeremy's case but said that anyone who violates probation by using marijuana has to face consequences. They can violate state or federal law, Buck said. That's a court ruling. That isn't a Ken Buck rule. Buck said he is concerned about the fact that Jeremy is a veteran, and his office is working on creating a veterans diversion court. They haven't considered how to deal with DUI cases, though, because they're so dangerous, Buck said. We're trying to deal with those who have served their country and who have come back with injuries in a special way, Buck said. Jeremy hopes to be allowed to complete probation using Marinol, without serving jail time. He said even if that doesn't happen, he hopes officials will find a way in the future to help veterans who get tangled in the legal system. I want to raise enough awareness so that this doesn't happen to guys coming out of there, Jeremy said.
Thanks, B. Article number 4. Marijuana-friendly Colorado debates blood level limits. Take it away.
Marijuana-friendly Colorado debates blood level limits. T.W. Farnham, The Washington Post. Source: HeraldExtra.com. Denver, when is someone too stoned to drive? The answer, it turns out, has been anything but simple in Colorado, which last fall became one of the first states in the country to legalize marijuana. Prosecutors and some lawmakers have long pushed for laws that would set a strict blood level limit for THC, the key ingredient in cannabis. A driver over the limit would be deemed guilty of driving under the influence, just as with alcohol. Such legislation has failed several times in recent years in the face of fierce opposition from marijuana advocates and defense lawyers, who claim a one-size-fits-all standard doesn't work for marijuana because it affects the body differently than alcohol. On both sides, passions run high. I haven't had a car accident since I was 18, and I've had marijuana in my system for most of that time, said Paul Sorini, 39, one of numerous weed activists, or wakeivists, who spoke out against setting a firm blood level limit during a public hearing in the state capitol this week. We have to create some standards to protect public safety. Not doing so, in my opinion, is reckless public policy, said John Jackson, the police chief in nearby Greenwood Village. Anytime you legalize things like this, you'll have more of it on the roadway. If we had vending machines with OxyContin, there'd be more people on OxyContin driving on the roadways. And that's not safe. Since the passage of Amendment 64 in November, Colorado has been wrestling with the many questions of how to regulate the new marijuana reality, from how to tax it and monitor its growth to where people can buy it, sell it, smoke it and advertise it. But drug driving looms as one of the most critical and controversial issues. The outcome of Colorado's struggle to shape marijuana-related DUI laws could have far-reaching implications, as a growing number of states approve marijuana for medical use and others consider legalizing the drug altogether. State Senator Steve King, a Republican who supports a THC limit, insists that driving high is no different than driving drunk. "You're a threat and a hazard," he said. "The consensus should be to err on the side of safety for the traveling public." Michael Elliott and other marijuana advocates argue that marijuana affects different people differently, and that setting a THC limit would free prosecutors from having to prove their cases and could lead to wrongful DUI convictions. "When it comes to criminal law, we are on the side of protecting the freedom of our citizens and holding the criminal justice system to the highest standards of proof," said Elliott, a lawyer and executive director of the Colorado-based Medical Marijuana Industry Group. "Though research and opinions vary widely, studies have shown that smoking marijuana tends to affect spatial perceptions. Drivers might swerve or follow other cars too closely, as well as lose their concentration and suffered from slowed reaction times." Such findings have led some researchers to conclude that driving high doubles the chances for an accident, and that smoking pot and drinking before driving is a particularly dangerous mix. Every state bars driving under the influence. But convictions in drug driving cases generally rely on police officers' observations rather than blood tests. The White House in a drug policy paper last year called on states to adopt blood limit laws in an effort to reduce drug driving incidents by 10% by 2015. But different states have taken different approaches. In Ohio and Nevada, where medical marijuana is legal, the limit for driving is 2 nanograms per milliliter of blood. In Washington state, that limit is 5 nanograms. A dozen other states, including Illinois, Iowa, and Arizona, have zero-tolerance policies for driving under the influence of marijuana and various controlled substances. In Colorado, both sides agree that people shouldn't drive impaired. The fight is over what should be used as proof of impairment. Marijuana advocates argue that, unlike with alcohol, traces of the drug remain in the bloodstream long after an individual has smoked pot, and that a THC test can mistakenly suggest a person is high, especially in a regular smoker who has built up tolerance to the drug. But officials who favor blood level limits say tests exist that can pinpoint active THC in the bloodstream in the hours immediately after marijuana usage. People on both sides cite the work of Dutch researcher Jan Ramakers, who found that marijuana users generally are impaired at a level of 5 nanograms, but that many cannabis users do develop higher tolerances. Ramakers, in an interview, said he supports the 5 nanogram limit, noting that lawmakers have long set a legal limit for alcohol in the name of public safety, even though people have different tolerances and impairment varies by person. Who should the law serve? The individual or the population? He asked. Still, some in Colorado are concerned about drawing a bright line between impaired and unimpaired when it comes to marijuana. The state Senate's majority leader, Democrat Morgan Carroll, said research suggests that impairment can occur with anywhere from 2 to 20 nanograms per milliliter of blood. "My number one problem is that you could convict someone at 5 nanograms who wasn't actually impaired," she said. Lawmakers are working on a compromise to break the long-standing impasse. A bill backed by King and other legislators would set 5 nanograms as the legal limit, but a test indicating that level would not automatically result in a DUI conviction. Instead, people accused of driving under the influence would be able to argue in court that they weren't impaired. The measure is working its way through the State House and appears likely to pass. Carroll is still not fond of the 5 nanogram limit but says she and others might be swayed by the provision that would allow defendants to make their case in court. "It gives the accused the opportunity to come in and offer proof," she said. At Tuesday's hearing, a string of law enforcement officials and a state toxicologist testified in favor of the legislation. Ed Wood, whose son was killed in a car accident caused by a drug driver, said he supported the bill but wants an even tougher standard. "We believe Colorado deserves better," he said. But Sereny and other activists voiced their opposition, with some arguing that marijuana often induces paranoia and causes people to drive abnormally slowly, as opposed to alcohol, which can provide the liquid courage to drive irresponsibly. King, the lawmaker who has long pushed for a legal limit, grows agitated at the suggestion by some marijuana advocates that they drive as well or even better high. "It's a reason," he said, to put a limit in place as soon as possible. I heard that 1/8 argument 3/8 25 years ago with alcohol, he said. If you want to smoke marijuana, smoke marijuana. But smoke and walk, smoke and get a ride, smoke and take a cab. Don't smoke and drive, that's the point we're trying to make.
Article number 5. Enviro Textiles, Hemp Products, listed with USDA Biopreferred Program. Take it away.
Enviro Textiles Hemp Products listed with USDA Biopreferred Program. Hemp-based products qualify for federal procurement preference from the USDA. By PRWEB. Source, virtualstrategy.com. Enviro Textiles, LLC, a Colorado-based industrial hemp and natural fiber manufacturer, is pleased to announce that it has earned approval from the USDA Biopreferred Program as the only hemp products manufacturer to qualify for listing their products in the Federal Procurement Preferred category. To quote the USDA's website, the purpose of the USDA Biopreferred Program is to promote the increased purchase and use of bio-based products. The program is expected to promote economic development, creating new jobs and providing new markets for farm commodities. Barbara Philippone, president of Enviro Textiles, LLC believes, the addition of hemp to a U.S.-approved government program is a historic achievement for biodiverse agriculture, and is blazing the path to legalizing the growth of industrial hemp in the United States. Legalization would provide our farmers with a drought-resistant, pesticide-free, multi-purpose, and value-added crop. Hemp has over 25,000 uses, including variations of food, fuel, feed, and fiber. While critics fear that hemp will have little economic impact, the reality is clear. With investment in farming, manufacturing, and jobs training, the U.S. could experience a large resurgence in virtually all industries, farming, manufacturing, and export, to name a few. The reach of the industrial hemp industry has incredible potential, with the ability to introduce new raw materials that are already successfully used for wide-ranging products across the world. Industrial hemp would open up new markets and expand existing markets while leaving a very small carbon footprint. It should be noted that the U.S. is one of the world's largest consumers of hemp-derived products. However, we are unable to grow hemp locally and in all states until legislation currently underway is passed. The question is not if industrial hemp will have a positive impact in the U.S. The question is, will we see the opportunity to grow and develop this commodity within our own borders? Enviro Textiles is a woman-owned industrial hemp and natural fiber manufacturing company based in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, and is the largest importer of hemp textiles in the U.S. Barbara Philippone, founder and president of Enviro Textiles, has created thousands of jobs across the globe in her 37 years of development surrounding natural fiber production and product development. She has developed industry in India, Hungary, Poland, Romania, Mexico, South Korea, and China, with China presently providing hemp to Enviro Textiles for their products. Being a leading expert in processing and economic development, Enviro Textiles proudly sells their products in the U.S. and to over 70 countries worldwide. Enviro Textiles presently has offices in the U.S., China, and Mexico, and focuses on natural fiber products and economic development in regions with commodity levels of various natural fibers. Being one of the first companies to be USDA Biopreferred qualified and having products listed for federal procurement preferred status, Enviro Textiles is leading the way for investment in biodiversity, non-GMO farming, and job creation. Philippone stated. Please also note, Enviro Textiles is excited to announce we celebrated our 12th year in business on February 15, 2013. Thanks to all that have supported us over the years.
Article number 6. New study shows cannabis effects on driving skills.
New study shows cannabis effects on driving skills by AACC. Source, SACBI.com. New research appearing online today in Clinical Chemistry, the Journal of AACC, shows that cannabis can be detected in the blood of daily smokers for a month after last intake. The scientific data in this paper by Bergamaschi et al. Can provide real help in the public safety need for a drug driving policy that reduces the number of drug driving accidents on the road. Cannabis is second only to alcohol for causing impaired driving and motor vehicle accidents. In 2009, 12.8% of young adults reported driving under the influence of illicit drugs, and in the 2007 National Roadside Survey, more drivers tested positive for drugs than for alcohol. These cannabis smokers had a tenfold increase in car crash injury compared with infrequent or known users after adjustment for blood alcohol concentration. In this paper, 30 male chronic daily cannabis smokers resided on a secure research unit for up to 33 days, with daily blood collection. 27 of 30 participants were THC positive on admission, with a median range concentration of 1.4 mcgl 0.3.3. THC decreased gradually, with only 1 of 11 participants negative at 26 days. 2 of 5 remained THC positive 0.3 mcgl. For 30 days. These results demonstrate, for the first time, that cannabinoids can be detected in blood of chronic daily cannabis smokers during a month of sustained abstinence. This is consistent with the time course of persisting neurocognitive impairment reported in recent studies and suggests that establishment of per se THC legislation might achieve a reduction in motor vehicle injuries and deaths. This same type of per se alcohol legislation improved prosecution of drunk drivers and dramatically reduced alcohol-related deaths. These data have never been obtained previously due to the cost and difficulty of studying chronic daily cannabis smoking over an extended period, said Dr. Marilyn Hustis of the National Institutes of Health and author on the paper. These data add critical information to the debate about the toxicity of chronic daily cannabis smoking. About AACC. The American Association for Clinical Chemistry, AACC, brings together the global laboratory medicine community in the pursuit of improving health and healthcare through laboratory medicine. With more than 8,500 members, including MDs, PhDs, research scientists, and others involved in developing tests and directing laboratory operations, AACC advances scientific collaboration, knowledge, expertise, and innovation through its many programs, publications, and initiatives. For more information, visit www.aacc.org. Clinical Chemistry is the leading international journal of clinical laboratory science, providing 2,000 pages per year of peer-reviewed papers that advance the science of the field. With an impact factor of 7.9, clinical chemistry covers everything from molecular diagnostics to laboratory management.
Article number 7. Latinos Food Corporation prepares for growth in the potential $46 billion U.S. medical marijuana market. Take it away, B, for the last time of the week.
Latino Food Corporation prepares for growth in the potential $46 billion U.S. dollars medical marijuana market. Acquisitions underway to acquire local marijuana edible suppliers, with plans for national expansion by Latino Food Corporation. Source: SACBI.com. Latino Food Corporation OTC, LATF, recently announced its new business plan that calls for acquisitions and growth in the medical marijuana industry. In addition to its current operations and prior acquisitions, the company has formed new partnerships with various medical marijuana dispensaries and edibles that may transform into strategic and acquisition candidates. Management has scheduled several site visits and meetings with potential joint venture and acquisition candidates in the next few days to discuss moving forward plans and strategies on how they could fit into our strategic model. Several strong candidates came to mind, and with the right timing and commitment, there will be an announcement shortly. Based on extrapolations of Washington State's Office of Financial Management, estimates that the total U.S. marijuana marketplace could be as big as $46.42 billion per year if cannabis were legalized nationally. That does not include ancillaries such as hydroponics or paraphernalia, or services to the dispensary industry such as landlords, testing labs, security systems, insurance, advertising. The legalization of medical marijuana in several states has paved the way for a budding edible medical marijuana industry, and the company is expanding into this exploding new marketplace of medical marijuana and cannabis edibles. Medical marijuana edibles have been popular ever since the 60s, when people would prepare it in the oven in brownie and cake mixes to stimulate the THC. Modern medicinal marijuana distributors and retailers have mastered preparing many different edible products. Now patients have several ways in which they can take their medication, in contrast to only being able to smoke or vaporize it. We are pleased to make great progress in upcoming acquisitions and growth in the edible marijuana market, stated Thursday La, Chief Executive Officer. Additionally, the due diligence on our planned acquisitions in the edible medical marijuana market are proceeding as planned, and we hope to have an announcement in the near future on this and other initiatives. About Latino Food Corporation, Latino.com. Latino Food Corporation is an investment portfolio company that acquires food products, medical marijuana edibles and related products services to enhance their growth and development. The company builds revenues and asset value through a model of continuous growth, income from or sale of its portfolio holdings, and product licensing or distribution agreements. Safe Harbor Statement. This release contains forward-looking statements within the meaning of Section 27A of the Securities Act of 1933, as amended, and Section 21E of the Securities and Exchange Act of 1934, as amended. Those statements include the intent, belief or current expectations of the company and its management team. Prospective investors are cautioned that any such forward-looking statements are not guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties, and that actual results may differ materially from those projected in the forward-looking statements as a result of various factors. Accomplishing the strategy described herein is significantly dependent upon numerous factors, many that are not in management's control. Some of these factors include the ability of the company to raise sufficient capital, attract qualified management, attract new customers, and effectively compete against similar companies.
All right, thanks, B. That's all I have for this week. Till next time, y'all have a good day, good night, good week. Bye-bye.
We pollinated your minds. Now, go pollinate the world.
Mm-hmm.